Welcome back to the SCBWI podcast. I'm your host, Theo Baker. And on today's episode, I talk to one of the biggest and best publicists in the business, Tracy Von Stratton, founder and president of TVS Media Group. You may not know Tracy's name or TVS Media, but they've launched and run hundreds of successful publicity and marketing campaigns for artists who are now household names. If you've got Tracy handling your publicity, you can feel pretty good about your book's chances. Her firm does publicity for incredible creators like Suzanne Collins, M.T. Anderson, Aisha Saeed, Raina Telgemeier, Sean Tan, and even Colin Kaepernick. For a lot of us, making the book can be easier than publicizing it, comparatively speaking, of course. But, you know, many of us become bookmakers because dealing with people and selling ourselves is difficult. And then after all that work of making the book, it can feel like getting off a transoceanic flight in a new country, expecting that everyone can speak your language. And of course they cannot. But as bookmakers, we have a duty to our work and the books we make to give them the push they need to stand on their own in the big world. And I talked at length and in depth with Tracy about what publicists do, and how publicity is different from marketing, and how to give yourself and your work the best chance possible to break out. We cover it all, so give Tracy a listen. She's got facts and knowledge to spare. Please enjoy. Would you tell me a little bit about where you come from and how you got to here?
Sure. I come from Chicago, which is a great place to be from. And I wanted to get into children's books at a time when there was no internet and it was harder to find information. And I think all I knew about were editors, and I would have done kind of anything in children's books. And I moved to Boston, actually, and decided, and, you know, was just looking for jobs in children's books. And the first job that opened up was a publicity and marketing assistant. I didn't know what publicity was or marketing, but I said, yes, please, I would like to do that. And I did. And it was just perfect for me. And I did that for a few years. And then I moved to New York eventually. So I was in New York in-house at various big publishers, a lot of the big houses, and was in primarily publicity. I kind of got that fork in the road. Do you want to choose publicity or marketing? And I chose publicity and was in New York for 23 years. Most recently heading up Scholastic's trade publicity department for 13 years. And I was at Simon & Schuster for 7 years before that. But then in 2019, I decided to move home to Chicago and started my own PR firm.
So I know the answer to this, but some people might not. And you mentioned the fork in the road, publicity v. marketing.
What is the difference anyway?
I have to ask it, just so everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different ways to describe that. You know, the simplest explanation that I can come up with really is that publicity is free and marketing costs money. Another term for PR or publicity is earned media, which again, it's earned. It's not, it doesn't cost anything. You don't pay for a book review. So, you know, another person once said, you know, publicity is sort of outside the bookstore and marketing is inside the bookstore. That doesn't really always track, but those are sort of along the lines. I mean, really publicity, what we consider, especially in books, is book reviews, author interviews, blog interviews, a podcast interview, and then public events for which you're not paid. So a book festival, a bookstore event, that kind of thing that's open to the public. That's the stuff publicity departments handle. All of your ALA conferences, your bookmarks, your book trailers, your paid placement in the bookstores, your floor displays, your brochures, your advertising, that's all marketing and it all costs a lot of money. So that's my simplest explanation.
So what were the big guys doing when you started? What were the big publishers doing well?
Well, I mean, you know, the change since I've been in the industry is enormous just because, I mean, there was no social media. There was barely an internet. You know, it was really traditional book reviews in newspapers and magazines and interviews on morning shows. I mean, that was what media meant. There were more book reviewers in traditional, you know, it was like the Chicago Tribune had a children's book review column, which they no longer have. You know, there were a lot of things like that. But now there are so many more ways for people to discover books and ways to reach consumers directly through social media or blogs or websites or all of these things that weren't there. One of the things I think has been impressive about publishers is that they've been really nimble and changed over time. And the ones that aren't static and don't just do the same old are the ones that do well. The ones that were early to blogs, early to social media. When I was at Scholastic, we launched the Hunger Games, and we always sort of, you know, we would joke around that with marketing plans, we would put in it, you know, and whatever social media thing is big in 2 years, because when we launched the Hunger Games, there was a bunch of marketing they were doing on MySpace, which was very cutting edge at the time, you know, and then we were, you know, doing things on other platforms as the books came out. But in the space of a couple of years, it was dramatic.
TBD.
Yes, exactly. Because you have to be looking that way, because you just don't know where the market's going to go. And the key is to find, where are the readers? Who is the audience for this book? Where are the readers, and how do we find them? And I gave a session this morning here at the SCBWI conference, and it was a very enlightening experience, because we recently worked on a book, and there was a big New York Times article and a big NPR article this week, which is the dream. That's what everybody wants. And I asked the 100 people in the room, raise your hand if you saw this New York Times article. And 3 of them had seen it. And I said, raise your hand if you heard this NPR article. And 2 of them had seen it. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who listen to and read those things, but there are a lot who don't. And so sometimes, you know, being on the publisher's Instagram is going to maybe get to those people in a way that the New York Times is not. So the key is to be in as many places as you can to try to reach the readers and the audience for the book.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a funny thing, because you work so hard and you're like, yes, this is the dream we're in. And then, yeah, okay, like that reality slaps you in the face. And one of the things that's real right now is that for a lot of people who are in the creative position is they're overwhelmed, but there are so many options, and they don't. And I know that you talk a lot about defining who you are in the marketplace and mm-hmm. the brand, so you can navigate all those different places, and it's not so overwhelming. Let's get specific. Let's create like a test case.
Sure.
Okay. Someone has been toiling in their studio apartment for 5 years, and let's say her name kind of rhymes like Suzanne Collins or whatever, and she's come up with this great book.
Yeah.
And it's got a ton of potential, and she's afraid of going out into the world. And so they don't necessarily know how to say, here's where I exist in the marketplace. Here's where I exist in the world of publicity and ideas. How should someone, when they're, okay, like let's say the book has been bought and it's been edited, and mm-hmm. it's looking good. The book's looking good, and it's got some hype.
And it's coming,
and the editors are happy about it, and they're going to go to bat for it. How does somebody at that point start to think about who they are in the world and where they fit in?
I mean, I think what you're talking about, you know, first you need a website, and that should be kind of the basis for everything. And then I think, yeah, there's so many different choices for social media and different platforms, and it can be really overwhelming. I think it matters if you're an author, are you an artist? You know, if you're an artist with more of a visual platform, then Instagram might be better for you. If you're a genius at making videos, maybe TikTok's the place for you. My big piece of advice for all of this, you know, we're all regular human beings. We have schedules and lives and day jobs and families and books to write, and there are only a certain number of hours in the day, and we do need to sleep. And you're better off doing fewer things well than a million things poorly. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to put all of your eggs in the Instagram basket and do it in a great way, that is going to serve you so much better than having, you know, an account on some other thing, you know, that you never post on. And I always sort of say, no one is going to be annoyed at you or have a bad feeling if they go to X or Threads or Blue Sky or TikTok and you don't have one. They're just going to say, oh, Theo doesn't have one. But if they go to it and you haven't posted since 2019, they're going to say, wow, his Twitter stinks, you know, and then that's a bad feeling. And so you're just better off not being there.
Yeah.
And decide kind of where are your talents and interests and lean into those things. And if doing more than two is too much, just do two.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know?
It is a lot.
You know? Well, it is. But you also can post the same thing on two different platforms. They are probably reaching other people. And then the other biggest question I always ask people is kind of, well, who is the audience? Who is your audience? Mm-hmm. Who are you trying to talk to in the first place? You know, for some YA authors, it might be actually YA readers and librarians and booksellers and parents or other readers. But, you know, if you're doing picture books, you're not talking to five-year-olds. You're talking to adults and you're talking to, like, you know, the same gatekeepers, but you want to reach parents and librarians and booksellers. And so what are they going to be interested in? What kind of content are they looking for? And also you know, people hear brand and they go, ugh, it's, you know, it's commercial. Ugh, I'm an artist. Yes, you are. But your brand can be that you write great books. It's still for sale. But beyond the for sale, you are a whole person more than just your book. And what I always sort of challenge people to try to define anyway, like, what makes your book different from someone else's? You know, first, what space are you in? Now, some people only write middle grade. Some people do the whole range. They write for all the age groups. They also have adult academic. I mean, you know, some people's careers are very varied, but some are very specific. I do picture books. That's all I do. But whatever your space is, what makes you different from another creator? You know, is it that you're actually a chemical engineer and so you write about whatever, or you know about climate change, or maybe you're a teacher or a librarian is your day job, and you know, but what you know, or your background is in X, or you live in this place, or you have this cultural identity and you write from that perspective, or you're a poet and so all of your books are really lyrical, or you know, you're a world builder and so you build amazing worlds and you're a fantasy writer. Like, what is it that is the essence, the common denominator of your work? And I feel like you want to put that forward, but you're also, you know, do you bake? Do you like sports? Do you live in a warm climate? Do you like, who are you in it? You know, do you have a dog? People like pictures of pets and kids. You know, you don't have to show your kids, but you know, they want to know the whole person. And so you can choose how much of your whole person you put forth in the world, but there probably are some personal interests and things, whether you're a chef, whether you're a gardener, whether, you know, you refurbish, you know, you paint your house, or, you know, so you can intersperse the real book promotion with kind of who you are, but being mindful of audience, because you just have to ask yourself, why are they following me?
Mm-hmm.
What are they getting from me? You know, do you do research for your books? If you do, and that's, you know, do you have a picture of you at the Smithsonian researching whatever it is that you're researching?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's, you know, you might take those pictures and save them until closer to publication to do a process thing. You know, you don't have to do it 3 years before you've sold the book or whatever. But I mean, it's like a window into your process.
As creative people, what you want to do is you want to give someone a shorthand really quickly. Here's my hook.
Mm-hmm.
How do I'm trying to hook attention as right. fast as I possibly can.
Right.
Now, we also have to do that as people. What is my hook? Because people are busy and you,
right.
no one wants to sit there and appreciate the entire complexity of the whole person. No one has time for that. What you're saying is what people have to ask themselves is, what can I give people that is uniquely, that they can't get anywhere else?
Right. Without trying too hard. I think authenticity is important. You know, people can sense sort of fake overselling.
Sweatiness, right?
And you're just authentically yourself. But it is, what are they getting from me? What is my point of view? What is my expertise? What is my, you know, there are some authors that write on certain topics and they might post an article on the format formerly known as Twitter or whatever. You know, it's an article that I would never have come across because I'm not traveling in those circles, you know? So what I'm looking to them for is, you know, whatever their expertise or advocacy or you know, they're, you know, whether I, like, there's someone I follow who's, I follow a lot of journalists, of course, but, you know, this one particularly has been writing about book banning. And so she's putting forth articles that I might not run across. And so I'm relying on her as that expert, mm-hmm. because that's something I'm interested in following. And, you know, she's providing that for me and context for me that I'm not going to get somewhere else.
Well, I think that's important to bring up because I think a lot of creators think of publicity as sell, sell, sell all the time, which is, they think, oh, I don't want to sell out.
There's indirect selling.
Right, which is, here's what I'm interested in. To make the books that I make, I have to put in a lot of stuff.
Right.
I have to become an expert on all these different things.
Right. Right, to an author of board books, and but they were like about engineering things, and she showed this stack of engineering books, and it was sort of, you wouldn't believe that I actually read these to make this board book, but I did, mm-hmm. because you actually have to know your stuff even to distill it to this little thing. And so I think that, that any window into the process people are really interested in, but I also think, you know, some people write at a desk. Some people write longhand. Some people sit on their couch curled up with their cat. Some people go for walks and mull things over. And, you know, I mean, I was sort of joking about this earlier, but, you know, if you live in California and you write YA romance and that's the beach where I got the idea for the scene where the, you know, hero and heroine kiss and you show a picture of it. I mean, anything like that is just interesting. And look, I live in Chicago. In the winter, I want to see palm trees. You know, lean into where you live. Like, I talked to someone who lives in the mountains in, you know, Colorado, and I thought, that's gorgeous. And you take it for granted when you live there, but I want to see that. And also, it gives me a sense of place, of where you live. It's, it makes you more three-dimensional, makes you more real. I try to lean into Chicago things. You know, I sort of say, if you're following me on social media, you might, you know, you're going to get a lot of children's book content. You're going to get a lot of Chicago, and you might get a lot of Chicago sports, whether you want it or not, but it's kind of who I am. And I think that people appreciate the whole person, even if your expertise and your focus and your promotional efforts are on your books.
So one thing I was thinking about, is there any room anymore for the kind of old school, like, publicity stunt to get the kind of, like, you know, because we're, you know, everything's really shifted to one of seven different social media type accounts or newsletters. I think a lot of people are doing newsletters right now because they can control more of it. You're not big on newsletters.
Again, I'm big on people doing things well, mm-hmm. and being consistent.
Consistent.
I think if you do a newsletter, and I know some authors who do them brilliantly, where they send them out once a month or once every 2 months, and they're chock full of great information, and they actually do them, they're great. They're effective. They work. They let people know what's going on. I know other people who say, sign up for my newsletter, and they haven't sent one out since 2020. Do it well or don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Consistency is huge.
Consistency,
right?
Is huge. Consistency of posting. Again, there's overdoing things, but I just think finding whatever the cadence is that fits into your life. I mean, I don't care if you do a newsletter twice a year, but do it twice a year. It's consistency.
Okay, so let's talk about, I want to get kind of get back. Okay, let's say somebody's got something coming out, mm-hmm. in a year. Mm-hmm. And what can they start doing? Let's say they haven't done all that much. Let's just say that this is just a person who's hasn't spent their adult life gathering friends online. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
What can they start doing? Let's say they have a year of runway, a year to build up.
A year of runway is good.
Is that enough time to sort of get a good platform? Mm-hmm. So what can they start doing to really start getting that earned publicity?
The only thing, well, their publisher needs to worry about the earned publicity. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be worrying about that so much. I think what they should focus on, and they're, oh, I get so many questions, you know, do I have to have this many followers to get a book contract? Do I have to have no, you need to write a good book. Just write the best book you can. That is your job. That is your number one job. To me, the number two thing is have a good website. I think that is the most important thing that you can do, that is clear and easy to navigate and has all the information in there that people, again, who's your audience, the people coming there. A lot of people who who write children's books make the mistake of doing these like really kid-friendly websites, and kids are not going to your website. They're the smallest group. I mean, there are some authors that reach a certain prominence where kids are doing book reports and everything, then fine. Have a tab called Kids, and you can have your like FAQs for kids in a separate place. But your bio should not be talking to kids. Mm-hmm. It should be a professional bio that has all of your accomplishments and your degrees and your job and what state you live in and all of that. Like, think of it as if I were going to a conference and they were introducing me at the conference, that, you know, the thing that's in the catalog that the publishers use, that's the bio.
Right.
Not the sing-songy, cutesy thing, it's because you write children's book. Well, I think they just are like talking to kids, but that's not who's going to your website. No. Again, for some authors, kids are going to their website. Right. And for some, they have these awesome areas that are called homework helper
resources
and FAQs. And that can be on your website 100% in a place, kids. They will know that's for them and that's where that stuff is, but not in lieu of your professional self that should be kind of forward, because that's not the majority of people coming to your website. So I think having a good website that gives your publicist, that gives the marketing department, that gives your publisher the tools that they need to sell you, basically, you know, and that if anybody goes there, whether it's a journalist or a bookseller or a librarian, and they want to know, who are you? I heard about your book. The publisher dropped off the galley and I want to know who this person is. I want to know more. You know, it's got your photo. It's got your bio. It's got information about your book. You know, that's the most important thing. Then I think you need to decide, am I going to be on social media if you're not already? Let's say we're starting from scratch.
Yeah. Let's say this person's got 98 followers
fine.
On Instagram.
That's fine. And that's okay. You know, you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
But you can do some preliminary work. Again, who's the audience for your book? Is it a picture book? Is it middle grade? You know, start following a bunch of educators, a bunch of authors in your space. Follow them, they'll follow you back. A lot of the time they will. You know, follow a bunch of librarians, but look at who's following. If you see an author that you think is kind of writing in the same vein that you're writing in or has the audience you want, see who's following them and follow a bunch of those people. And, you know, that will sort of tell you.
And see what they're doing that's working.
And see what they're doing. And that's the other thing. Do a lot of research. Look at a bunch of other websites. Look at author websites. You'll look at some and say, wow, I don't like that at all. Well, that's helpful. Don't do that. And then things that you think, wow, that's great. I'm totally stealing this one idea from over here, you know, and that will help you with that. And the same with social media. Look and see which posts get the most likes, the most engagement. Some of theirs probably get a lot. Some of them don't. Well, what kind of a post was it? What was it about? And you can do a little bit of just anecdotal research to figure out what works and what doesn't. You also can experiment. You know, if your post about whatever got more likes than any other post that you've done, ask yourself why.
And it's funny, I often see this sometimes, especially with like kind of really established people, is they might spend, they'll do a post that, wow, it looks like they spent 2 hours working on it and it gets 19 likes. And then they post a picture of them, their face, and it has 800 likes.
Right.
You know?
Right. And you ask yourself, well, what was it? Was it because it was super personal? You know, it didn't look packaged and promotional. The other thing is,
or like the trailer, they post the trailer and it gets 38 likes.
Right.
One of their dog, 190.
That's true. I mean, you know, you can use more hashtags. You should tag people. People forget to tag their publisher all the time.
Mm.
And, you know, and then they complain that their publisher doesn't support and like their stuff. And I said, well, your publisher doesn't have ESP because they don't know, you know, there are social media managers that are out there and they can't possibly follow every author that the person, you know, that the house publishes. If you tag them, they will see it. If you tag them, they may decide. I mean, they're not going to post every single thing that you post, but the guaranteed way for them to see it is to tag them.
I want to talk, there's something like the network effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's everyone's dream, is to sort of have this self-perpetuating network where you've set it up so that like you're following the people you want to be following and they're following you, and just like it seems to move of its own momentum.
Well, social media is supposed to be social.
Yeah.
And it is. That's how it grows. And you can be a little more strict, I could say calculated or strategic about how, like, you can give yourself goals. Like, I'd like to double my followers in 6 months. You know, is that an achievable goal? Maybe it is if you only have 98 to start. If you have 5,000 to start, that might be a little aggressive. But again, strategically liking and following a lot of other accounts by tagging other, you know, I use this example all the time. You go to your local indie, you post a photo of yourself in front of the sign, you post that and tag the indie. Then you post the book stack that you bought. Then you tag all the authors whose books you bought. I mean, that's because it's your book and reading life, but you're also drawing a lot of connections and attention and, you know, congratulate, happy book birthday to my friend's book. And then maybe they'll do that back for you. The community, I mean, I was talking with someone about this morning, you know, one of the things I love about children's books and the children's book community is that everyone is so supportive of one another. Everyone is really collegial and it is a community. It's not some cutthroat, nasty environment. So people are really happy to help you and congratulate you and promote your book. The other thing you can really do to promote engagement is asking questions. You know, a lot of posts that people do are very static. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing, you know, people are kind of like, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
But if you've written a middle grade book about a dog, you can ask people what their favorite middle grade books about dogs are. There's a lot, you know, or say like, you know, I have a middle grade book about a dog and the dog doesn't die. Or, mm-hmm. you know, say something kind of, you know, but what, or what was your favorite when you were a kid? Mine was Shiloh or whatever, you know, and, but that people kind of can't help but rank or vote or chime in. And it's just, it's again, that engagement that you're talking about, you can prompt it versus a static thing where there's nothing to do. And even if you say, you know, I can only write, I mean, this is one of the things I find fascinating working with authors. I ask them all the time, like some of them are like, I can only write in a completely silent room. I can only write if music's playing, but it can't be music with words. I can write on a train, on a plane, in the airport, walking down the street. I mean, creators are so phenomenally different. And so what's your style? And then sort of say, am I the only one that can, you know, write on the subway on my phone? Or does anyone else get distracted if the music has words? I mean, it's, but that's a cool conversation to have.
Well, speaking of which, you work with so many great creators, and they're all so different in so many different levels of exposure, different levels of comfort with different mediums. You have some that, like, I can tell don't like to do it. But I think they all share, for me anyways, the ones who are really successful share something, which is that they grab the public's attention in some way. You want to know more. You want to be on the team. You want to... So, for instance, you work with Sean Tan, who's kind of a private dude. And then you work with John Shu, who's out there 300 days a year.
That's true.
But they still have that same, both have that same, what is it that people who are really successful, because you're around a lot of really successful creators, is there any common denominators that you've noticed about how they attract attention to themselves?
They're all really different. I mean, the common denominator usually is the work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be at the beginning of a lot of really exciting things and where it's just a real team effort from the publisher, but it really starts with a book that everyone is super excited about. You know, from a PR point of view, you know, then there are other people I've worked with where they were already famous and then they wrote a book and, you know, that's a whole different thing. I guess what I would say is that it's true. Some authors are much more interested in the publicity piece than others. I have worked with a lot of very reclusive authors who want no part of it. I've worked with a lot of people who would love to do it and people aren't interested in them. I mean, you know, it's a challenge. But I also will say that a lot of times the book is the story and a lot of times the author's the story. Mm. You know, again, if you have a famous person, it almost doesn't matter what they wrote because it's XYZ celebrity has a new book. And so the Today Show is going to want to have them on. And that's great. And then there are always a lot of complaints about that, that they're taking all the attention away from the other books. And that's actually not true. In fact, in my career, I have always sort of leveraged those in order to talk about lesser known things. And that has worked extremely well. And, you know, I used to kind of say to people, if I don't have the big celebrity, I might not get the meeting with the morning show. Once I have the meeting with the morning show, I can tell them about all these other books that they would not have ever heard about. And so you really, you can leverage that in a great way. And it is a very relationship-based thing, publicity. Mm-hmm. You know, getting to know journalists and earning their trust. It's similar in many ways to, you know, an agent-editor relationship. You know, they develop relationships with all the editors, so they know who to pitch which book to because they know what they're interested in. Publicists learn what the journalists are interested in, what the hosts of the shows are interested in. And so then you can't pitch every single book on your list. You know, we would get that a lot too, where, oh, you only pitch the leads and you only pitch these books. And I would sort of use this example that I could get 5 calls in a row from different journalists and all of them say to me, like, what are your top 5 books? But depending on who's calling, I'm going to have a different list of 5 books. Mm. And, you know, I'm not going to say the same thing to the Today Show or Parents Magazine or 17, you know, I mean, it's, you know, or, you know, whatever. Your Rolodex and your index in your head is switching depending on what they're looking for. And that's part of what they're trusting us to do. But if you just gave them a bunch of stuff that made no sense, they're not going to call you next time.
Yeah. Well, I know that just from doing this little show. Sometimes we'll just get random queries where it's like, have you heard,
have you listened to our show?
You know, yeah. And that's really off-putting. And yes. I try not to be judgmental about it.
Right.
But when I can tell it's a form interview of someone who's got really no business being on the form query.
Right. Right. And that's, like, and these people do get a lot of spam. And so, you know, a lot of times what I consider a win is when they, you know, I want their response to be, they really get us. And even if this isn't the right book right now, like I welcome an email from her because at least it always makes sense. Yeah. And please keep asking. And that's kind of the best that you can hope for. And I would say, you know, editors would say, you know, can you pitch this book to the NPR or whatever? And I'd say, no, no, I cannot. They don't want that. And if I ruin that relationship, when you have the perfect book, I'm not going to be able to pitch it. And because there's also a big difference between this book is awesome and this is going to make a 4-minute segment on NPR.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what works for a book review does not always work for a radio segment, which is a completely different set of criteria. But when you're talking about the authors, I mean, you know, look, if we all knew exactly what made something a bestseller or made it successful, you know, it would be much easier business. But there, you know, sometimes someone has a really good story, but really ultimately, usually the book is really good.
Yeah.
And we have to start with that. And then if the author is reluctant and doesn't want to do press, then it's incumbent upon us to come up with other creative ideas and ways to get the book out there that does not involve the author. I mean, often, you know, I would say to producers sometimes when I had to decline a big show because the author didn't want to do it and they're perplexed, what do you mean? I'd say, well, this is a person who chose a profession that involves being in their room by themselves, not talking to anybody and writing. And that doesn't necessarily mean they want to be on TV. Those don't necessarily go together.
We've been talking with publicist and president of TVS Media Group, Tracy Von Stratton. If you'd like to learn more about her and the work she does, check out the TVS website at tvsmediagroup.com. Okay, let's get back to part 2.
So what are some avenues for that person? Because I know a lot of those people. What are some ways to generate... Okay, the introvert's dilemma. Let's call it that. How does the introvert the introvert and socially awkward introvert's dilemma? How do they start to kind of?
Honestly, I think school visits are one of the best ways to combat that. I think it really can hone your presentation skills, your comfort speaking in front of people. 5-year-olds maybe aren't as intimidating as adults. You know, eventually they may be asked to do a keynote, but the ones that have done school visit after school visit after school visit, you can kind of get the kinks out and get more comfortable. and
take the show on the road.
Yeah, but I really think that is one of the very best things that new authors and illustrators can do to get comfortable talking about their work, talking in front of an audience, and getting some of that experience. They're also, you know, media training is a thing, and your publisher can help you if you're intimidated, or you can say, you know, I'm interested in doing a podcast. The idea makes me have a stomach ache. You know, what can I do? I mean, it's easier when they're taped versus live. You know, I mean, there are different stakes for different sorts of things. But I think to start small and build from there. This is something I've started saying a lot about a lot of things, about goals. I feel like sometimes people aren't setting realistic goals for themselves. I think there's so much, especially on social media, where everybody only posts the great stuff.
The wins
and the sexy, glittery, sparkly things of like, this person's going on a 5-city tour, and this one had a cover reveal in Entertainment Weekly, and this person's got, you know, this thing, and they were on NPR. You know, that's what everyone is seeing. And I think having those goals is fantastic in the way that I think the aspiring actors dream of winning an Oscar someday. But I've started saying, you need to build a ladder to get there. Mm-hmm. And you need to start with a Q&A in Publishers Weekly. And you need to start with, you know, or Kirkus or something. And maybe a local newspaper interview. Or maybe something in your alumni magazine. Or maybe something like a local radio station or TV station or something like that, that then your publicist can also help pitch and leverage those things to get bigger things. But it's not really a 0 to 60 kind of thing. And most of the people getting all that stuff, you know, I was sort of, there was a thing I read once that said something like every overnight sensation has 20 years of work behind them. And I think that stuff's invisible to people because they see the big flashy things.
I like the idea of that it's a muscle, you know, and it's a muscle you can work. There's gains to be made there.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, I was just watching reading excerpts of the E. Jean Carroll trial, and she's, you know, she was talking about how she had to do some publicity, and she said, it was my duty as a writer. And I thought that was a great expression, because they're saying you didn't want to do the publicity. She said, it was my duty as a writer to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that since then, because as writers, as creative people, you pour your sweat into it. You pour your blood and your sweat into it. And then the book comes out and they say, look, this part's not for me. That seems, you know, like, I think you can, one can rise to the challenge and at least start making small gains.
Yeah, I think there is no better spokesperson for your book than you.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when authors and artists speak about their book, it's my favorite thing to listen to, hearing them talk about it. And I think it can just be a powerful tool. Can a publisher promote a book without author participation? Yes. And a lot of times we have authors that are from overseas and, you know, we're not necessarily doing events because they're not here. I mean, you know, Zoom has really changed things in a great way. It's opened up a lot of things where you don't have to be in the place to do whatever it is. But I think I would view it as an opportunity rather than like a drudgery. I mean, I think it's an excellent opportunity. And I think like anything, it is a different skill set. And it's something that needs to be learned. And if it's not comfortable for you, you can tell your publisher, I know this is important. I'd really like to be more of an asset. Can you help me? Is there a class I can take? Can we practice the questions? I mean, publicists often will do role playing. Like, I'll pretend to be the interviewer and I'll ask you the questions and, you know, practice with your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whatever. You know the same questions you get over and over again. It's a skill, and you can learn to get better at it.
I absolutely agree. And what I was thinking about is, you know, like book reviews, and let's say someone is they're new and their publisher is behind them, but you know they're not rolling out the big car. You know, they don't have the big budget for them.
Sure.
And they're the new person's going to have to do a lot of the legwork. What's something that they can do to sort of get their book reviewed in places, or is that really, like, you really should hire outside publicity help at that point?
This is a complicated answer, and having been on the other side of the desk for a really long time, I'm always kind of in defense of publishers a little bit more maybe than some freelancers. I think if you're publishing with a major publisher, because again, this answer is very different depending on where you're publishing, big five or even one of the mid-size, trade publishers, they have publicity departments. They're sending your book out for review. One of the big challenges, I like to say that the shoemaker's elves are doing a lot of work in the night on your behalf that you don't see.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening that you don't see. And just because you're not in touch with a publicist doesn't mean you don't have one, and doesn't mean that they're not sending your book out for review. But in an effort to give them time to do that, they can't be talking to every single one of their authors. They don't really need to be talking to you unless they're setting up public appearances for you or setting up interviews for you. But that doesn't mean that stuff isn't happening. There's an educational marketing department that's doing stuff. Your book is probably being exhibited at conferences. It's being sent to influencer librarians and educators. It's being sent to press. A lot is happening on your behalf that's invisible to you. So I don't really think you need to be worried or you need to do anything to get your book reviewed. I mean, it's extremely competitive. There's a lot, out there. I mean, even the trade reviews are harder to get because there are just so many books and they have to be choosy, but you're going to get reviewed somewhere. I think asking questions of your editor or your agent to sort of, I just always say ask before you do anything, because sometimes people make a lot of assumptions and then they go ahead and do things and they're stepping on toes. And to me, you're better off saying, here are my 10 things. Are any of these being done already? And is it okay if they're not for me to pursue these other things?
Yeah.
And in some cases, the answer is, yeah, sure. That would be great. Just keep us posted how it goes. And in other cases, it's, oh my God, please don't do that.
Let the professionals handle this.
Yes, because a lot of journalists do not want to hear from the author. They don't want to hurt your feelings. They're happy to hurt a publicist's feelings or just ignore them. But they're not. I mean, I would
say no, this isn't big time enough.
I was saying earlier, if you think you experience rejection as an author, try being a publicist for a day. Because all we get is either rejections or just radio silence. You know, it's very distressing sometimes. Well, and then that's the thing. Nobody's reporting back to you, I pitched your book to 300 people and they all said no. What you're hearing is the good news. But that's not reflective of the work.
Yeah.
And the sort of nothing's happening for my book thing isn't usually accurate. But there are certain festivals, for example, that only want the most famous people and they only want to be pitched by the publisher. And then there are other festivals where authors pitch themselves, and every publisher has different rules about that. So the key is to just ask. There has to be just communication, just saying, these are my things and which of these is it cool for me to just go and do it myself and which ones would be bad form. And they'll tell you.
Really set up a partnership.
Exactly. And it is a partnership. And I think that sometimes people have it set, they're afraid to ask questions, or, your agent can ask the questions, your editor can ask the questions, and then they'll let you know kind of where the holes are. Things you can do are, if you are friends with lots of authors, if you have a writer's group, if you know who the journalists are in your hometown that interview people, send that list to your editor to send to the publicity and marketing team. Mm. When the book comes out, here is a spreadsheet of my 12 author buddies and their addresses. Can they all get galleys or finish books when the time comes? They would probably all post about it on social media if we send it to them. If it's not 150 people, your publisher is going to be delighted to help spread the word. That's buzz. That's something you can do because those are your people.
I was just thinking about the same thing, because most people have that group. Most kind of creative people will say, I write books, but I'm also the lead contributing member of repairing old Mercedes Benzes, and I have a newsletter that goes out to 800 people.
Right. And a lot of times your college roommate works for CNN, or your next door neighbor writes for the local paper, or getting the book in the hands of those people can really pay off and be great. And so that period of time between when you've turned in your book and when the book is coming out, where you're sort of panicking, that's the time to put together your lists of contacts and ideas and all those things, so that when the galleys are ready, they can sort of start spreading the word in that way. Because if those people post about the book, then that helps spread the word.
Because the fear, right, is that the book comes out, the kind of balloon deflating sound, and just sort of nothing happens.
Right.
And that happens.
It does. It does. I mean, again, there's a longer tail, and things mm-hmm. can win state awards 2 years later when the book comes out in paperback. And I mean, there are all these things in children's books that aren't necessarily like the week of the pub date.
Well, and that's, I know a lot of people are very always not concerned, but they're looking at what's happening, what are the initial sales, what are the pre-orders, and right, there is the long tail. We could talk about historical, things like J.R.R. Tolkien's book sitting on the shelf for 10, we're not 1958 anymore.
Right.
But like, there is things that you can do where it's not the same quarter, where it's maybe two quarters after the book is published, and there's 10,000 of these books still sitting on the shelves.
Right. I mean, pre-orders are great. Telling all your friends and family, being very directed and specific on Facebook and saying, hey, everybody, pre-orders are great. My book is coming out and you should pre-order it. And here's a link to my local indie or whatever. Don't be shy. Mm-hmm. People don't necessarily know what to do.
And I think there's also a distinction, too, between people assume their friends and family are going to care.
Well, but they do, but you have to tell them what to do.
Say, yeah, okay, here's your instructions.
Yeah, buy my book. Here's the link. This is really helpful to me. Or, some people will link up with their local indie and say, if you buy it here, I will sign your copy. Mm-hmm. And that can be helpful and powerful and actually work.
Thank you for humoring me as I poke around.
It's very confusing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of confusing information out there.
What was especially clarifying is that, everyone wants to be proactive, but it's about being proactive in the right way and in partnering and seeing what can I bring that's unique to getting this publicity.
Right.
And partnering with a well-oiled machine.
Well, and also understanding what do you mean by publicity. I have this joke that I tell all the time where, it's only funny because it's true. When I was in-house, I would get a call from an editor saying, this author wants to talk to their publicist. And I would say, why? And they would say, they have questions. And I'd say, what are the questions? And they'd say, I don't know. And I said, please go find out. And they would come back and they would say, they want to know if we can make a bookmark, if their book is going to be at ALA, and about school visits, and if there's going to be an ad in the Horn book. And I would say, those are fantastic questions, none of which are handled by publicity. And everybody wants to know who their publicist is, and no one wants to know who their marketingist is. And the truth is, there are all of these things going on in the publishing company, but publicity is just a very small piece of it, as we talked about, kind of what that is. And so understanding and educating yourself about, now every house is organized differently. So I can't sit here and say, well, at every single house, this person does this and this person does that, because at some houses that are small, one person wears all the hats mm-hmm. and they do all the things, and that's fine. And again, different teams are organized different ways, and some publicity teams handle social and some marketing teams handle social and some have a whole social department. I mean, it just depends. But educating yourself on what all these things even mean and what all the different levers are that publishers pull and what departments there are will help you be able to ask smarter questions of your publisher. And, not everything is for you. I get a lot of, I want to do a DIY tour, and I'm going to go and stay with all my friends that live in all these cities, and we're going to call the bookstores. And I'm thinking, and the one author said to me, but my publicist thinks it's a terrible idea. I said, because it's a terrible idea. And she said, well, I just thought she didn't want to deal with it, or she didn't have time or whatever. And I said, you're just not going to sell a lot of books. Like, you're going to spend a lot of money going around. And what is the purpose of this? Do you, because it's also expensive and a lot of work for booksellers to order in books from the publisher, staff an event like that. They don't want to host an event that's not good because then they might be afraid the publisher wouldn't send a big author to them because they don't sell books at events. And there are a lot of complicated...
Or they have 100 signed books that they don't
know what to do with. And then they have books that they don't know what to do with, and then they've got to ship them back, and there's cost associated with that, and their receiving room. And I mean, they're just a lot. And or they have a really full events calendar, and their events person is hosting the new Newbery winner, and they've got other things that they need to be spending their time doing. And so, and realistically, how many people, I mean, unless you know, like, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I'm going home for Thanksgiving, and if I do an event in the local Indy, 40 people are going to come and buy my book. Great. Let's do that together. The publisher will talk to the sales rep. They'll reach out to the store. Everyone's delighted to work on that because that makes sense. But for this other person, I said, you should be doing school visits. You're going to sell 100 books everywhere you go. You do this DIY tour, you're selling 3 books a day. And why are you doing that? Because it sounds great that you have a tour? I'm not sure that that's a good use of anybody's time. So again, sometimes these things that sound really awesome aren't a good use of your own time.
What are some other, I just love it, terrible ideas?
The thing is, they're not terrible ideas for everybody.
Okay.
In every situation. It's just, it's about understanding the reality and the market of your book. And, you know, it doesn't sound exciting to say I'm doing 14 school visits in my home district, but you could sell 1,000 books that way.
Yeah. So what are some terrible ideas that you've heard over the years? Or just kind of, what are some, if someone would come to you and say, Tracy, I'm going to do this, and you're like, oh, please, sit down, let's talk. You know, what would be a couple or anything that someone has come to you? All right, the DIY book tour, unless you know.
I mean, again, sometimes a DIY, it can work and be successful. It can. It just depends. And some DIY book tours do include school visits, and then that can make sense. Again, it's case by case. All of this is case by case. But sometimes just saying that the thing that sounds like, oh, the big authors are doing this, and so if I pay for it myself, then I'll get this. But that doesn't always make sense. You know, advertising doesn't always make sense. I get
like paid
asked,
posts, like paid promotions.
paid posts. You know, if I buy this thing, is that going to, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's going to necessarily do anything. Some people do blog tours and it's very effective for them. Some people do blog tours and it's not effective for them. Again, it really depends on the situation. I actually don't think there are terrible ideas. Mm. I think as long as it's a conversation. I think barging ahead and going and doing something without checking with your publisher is almost always a bad idea because it has to be a collaboration. And a lot of times they might say, wow, that sounds really awesome. That's not something we can do. But, you know, we can support you in this way. If you do that, our social team can amplify it. Or we would be happy to give you 25 books to support that effort. Or I will give you we'll reimburse you up to $200 for going to that festival, even though that's not a festival that we really work with. I mean, that's the thing, is you might be pleasantly surprised by ways that your publisher can support you, even if it's something that they aren't going to necessarily do for you.
Yeah, I like that. I like to hear that because so often there can be an adversarial relationship or a black box relationship, and you think they won't say no, or they'll just say no, or like. But I like this idea of saying, let's collaborate, and you. I don't know what they'll do, and there's ways that they can support.
Well, and there are ways you can ask without being sort of I'm sure you're not going to do this, or is it, you know, but sort of say, I'm interested in this festival. Is this a festival that you pitch for? And they might say, no, you know what, it's a really tiny festival. Okay, well, so I'd like to pitch myself. Is that okay? And then, yeah, great. You know, but like I said, there are authors that we worked with where, you know, they wanted to do something, and we weren't going to be able to fully fund it. But we would reimburse up to a couple $100s, or we did send books for whatever it was up to a certain number if it was reasonable. So again, I think that that is a conversation and ways to work together.
Awesome. I this has been so clarifying and helpful, and I know so many of our listeners are going to, because what you're saying is clear, and what you're saying I'm going to try to recapitulate some of your main, but you can't really reduce it. But I think what's clear to me is know who you are, what you're good at, focus on those things, and focus on those things in collaboration with the people who are putting out your book and the people who are actually experts at selling a book, which you probably are not yet.
The only other thing that I didn't really address, which I get asked a lot, is about hiring an outside publicist, because we do get asked that a lot. And I really think if that's something you're considering, you kind of have to really, it can be costly, and you need to ask yourself what you're trying to get out of it. I mean, most publishers, if you're publishing with a significant house, doesn't have to be huge, but a house that has a publicity department, let's just put it that way, you know, your book is going to be sent out for review. You know, in most of those cases, I think the work is, we'd be really duplicating efforts. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to pay for extra support, it needs to be extra and additive and something that the publisher isn't doing. So you really need to educate yourself on what the publisher is doing, so that, because maybe you want to hire a marketing person or somebody to help you with social media or something. I mean, there are other things besides publicity. And, you know, so one of the questions we sort of ask is, well, what is it that, what do you have in mind? And in many cases, I don't necessarily feel that we can bring more to the table than your publisher is going to bring to the table. You're not yet at whatever stature that you're, you know, if you were going to get that national media, they would probably get that national media for you. You know, there have been cases where we've worked with authors for a period of time where, you know, I have 5 books coming out this year from 5 different houses, and I kind of want to elevate my profile, and I'd really like a piece in Publishers Weekly that's talking about all of them. And in that case, each publicist can only talk about her book. Right. And it's a little more difficult to look at the kind of whole career, or, you know, I really want to do a bunch of podcasts and I don't think my publisher is really in that space. You know, if there's something like that that's very concrete or very specific, or, you know, I have a background in XYZ and I want to be, you know, in that space and my publisher doesn't know from that stuff, you know, great. Then that's something we can really sink our teeth into and make our own that they're not doing. So I think those would be cases where it might make sense to bring in outside help. But if it's literally just to get your book reviewed, they're trying to do that.
Yeah, you want to come in with an idea, a very targeted idea, and not just say, I just want more publicity.
Right.
That's not going to...
Right. It's not, that's not specific, and it's probably not that realistic either.
I want to ask one more time about the analog publicity stunt. Is there any room for that in 2024? I don't even know what that is. You
it's
know,
so
making
funny.
Hats or something.
I know. There are some publicists that love a stunt. I've never really been as stunty. It can be fun though. You know, it depends. It depends on the book. I mean, if a book is about a certain thing, and you know, if you can get a good photo op.
Right.
You know,
like
that
a pop-up store or something, you know.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it needs to be the right thing. I mean, you know, if you can get a really good photo op and then somebody can pitch it to Publishers Weekly or something for their, like, you know, I just, again, you have to think about your return on investment. If it's no big deal to do the thing and you get the picture or the video and you put it on TikTok or you try and it's funny, great. But if it's going to be time consuming and expensive, and you don't know what you're going to get out of it. Because you really need to be thinking about, you know, is this going to help me sell books or is this just a stunt?
Yeah. And last question. Do you guys ever try to kind of get like a, you know, there's the things that blow up, like the Go to F to Sleep book, or, you know, like the viral thing that like just takes off. Like
you can't
really engineer that.
You can't engineer it. It's just so random. I mean, I've worked on books where that kind of stuff is like a gift that just comes out of nowhere, and you just never know.
Yeah.
You just never know. It's so hard. If we knew, we would be doing
it.
It's
so important to sort of think critically about who your audience is and what you're trying to do, you know, and what your intentions are, instead of just saying more, bigger, out, wider, you know.
Right. Well, and to really look at your career, if you can, as like pull back and look at it with more of a critical eye of just kind of where I am. And again, look at other author websites, look at other authors' social media, look at what people are doing well, look what you don't think they're doing well. Borrow ideas from that. Make achievable, reasonable goals for yourself that aren't going to make you depressed. You know,
that's a big thing.
Well, but it's true. People get really bummed out. And, you know, it's not reasonable to compare yourself with someone that's just not in your realm right now. And like I said, build a ladder. Have the big dreams. Have them. You should know where you're going and what your dreams are. But figure out what are those in-between steps to get there. And I think that will really help you. And try not to be distracted by the shiniest, biggest stuff that you see all the time. This one got a 7-figure deal, and this one was on the Today Show, and this one, you know, that's great. But, you know, I'd really like to be on Good Morning Seattle. You know, that's huge. And that clip can help your publicist pitch you for a national program. And, you know, so that you have to start in a reasonable place.
Build the ladder.
Exactly. Exactly. Build the ladder and then climb it. I love it.
That's all the time we have today on our program. On behalf of all of us at SCBWI, I'd like to thank Tracy for making the time to talk with us. If you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe to our totally free show and smash that star button for 5. And please head over to scbwi.org if you want to learn more about the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. This episode was produced by Chelsea Kimiko Hall and edited by Samantha Thomas. And this podcast is made possible with support from the Authors Coalition of America. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.